You started this hour with bombings. We'll end it with diplomacy. September 13th, 1993, Israeli and Palestinian leaders met at the White House, and it was the first significant step toward peace in decades.
We, who have come from a land where parents buried their children, we who have fought against you, the Palestinians, we say to you today, in a loud and a clear voice, enough of blood and tears. Enough.
The late Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin speaking there. The Oslo Accords brought Israeli Prime Minister Rabin and PLO leader Yasser Arafat together on a bright sunny day in front of an audience of more than 3,000 and millions around the world. Rabin was killed 2 years later by a terrorist, and Arafat eventually died before much beyond this historic photo op could advance peace between Israel and Palestinians. These were the Oslo Accords because a husband and wife duo from Norway, Terje Rud Larsen and Mona Juul, brought mortal enemies together through the profound power of human diplomacy in a nine-month secret negotiation back in 1993. That power and drama are now a powerful play that opened this week on Broadway. Mona Juul is now the Norwegian ambassador to the UK and stopped by our studios on the way to a Broadway opening night that would tell her story. She was with playwright J.T. Rogers and director Bartlett Schur. They were all anxious that with all the talk from the White House this week of bombing, that a story about real diplomacy and peace not bomb on opening night. Director Bart Schur sounded very confident.
The Oslo Accords as a story has all of the best possible ingredients for making good theater. There's two neutral observers who are the proxy for the audience, meaning the Norwegians, between two very intensely opposing groups, the Palestinians and the Israelis. So it meant it didn't have to be the American perspective. It didn't have to be any other perspective except theirs. It has a time pressure. They did this extraordinary thing in 9 months only, between January and September of 1993. It has progression, so it moves from one set of negotiators and it keeps upgrading to higher and higher level. It's completely heroic that two people could take it upon themselves without permission of either of their own governments to try to do this. And within that 9 months have the only signing ceremony and peace agreement in the most difficult region in the world at the White House. All those things are sort kind of incredibly mind-blowing. And to track them makes for a great piece of theater.
You know, there's always a question you ask yourself, beyond is it a cool story, is it exciting, does it have these ingredients of drama, what is the larger question that fascinates you as the storyteller that you're going to want to chew on for a year or two? And sometimes it takes a while to realize what that question is. And for me, what's been very clear, that the question, which I think is now even more pertinent in the moment we live in now than it was 6 months ago, is what must it be like to sit across from your mortal enemy and have the courage to see them as a human being and to discover that you are the one that is changed by seeing them that way.
Sitting across from your mortal enemy and seeing them for the first time. You experienced that?
Absolutely. That was our role, to sort of to put them together, to put them in the room and have them started to talk directly to each other and not through somebody else, not even us. But of course, we created the kind of atmosphere that they sort of felt relaxed. They were outside of everything in the middle of nowhere in Norway, where nobody knew that they were there. So they could start to really to relate to whom they were sitting opposite rather than to everything else, especially the media, which of course is always on a conflict like that. And we set some rules for them talking to each other. And one of them was that, why can't you just stop talking about what has happened? Because you will disagree about the past. You will never agree whose fault it was and who started that war and who did this to each other. Why don't you start talking about the future and what you could possibly do together and find common ground? And this is actually what they did.
And let's not forget that this meeting of mortal enemies was strictly illegal in Israel, mm-hmm. was something that could have gotten either of the individuals from the PLO killed in mm-hmm. the most public way, and was likely to get both of you and your colleague in massive trouble with your government and with the United States. I mean, this was shenanigans in the biggest possible way.
That's very true. And you can imagine for a country like Norway, being a small country, a very close ally with the U.S., of course, all our sort of foreign policy has always, through our NATO membership and otherwise, been quite dependent on having that close partnership with the United States. And on this, we sort of did something. We informed the U.S. government in the beginning, but at the time, it was actually also the U.S. policy not to deal with the PLO whatsoever. PLO was a terrorist organization that they had no relation to and didn't want to talk to. And there are some interesting parallels also these days with that kind of organization. Do you talk to them or not? We decided that we would do it. We would inform them. And that's what we did.
At this particular moment, the idea of successful diplomacy just seems like a joke. I mean well, do you find audiences coming to you going, huh?
No, surprisingly, the audiences are more hopeful now.
Yeah.
The show that we did in the 6 months ago, audiences are seeking more hope from the show than they did before. And it became a show not about Palestinians and Israelis, but about like Republicans and Democrats, you know. And they seem to long for an answer in it that they didn't seek in the same way before. Now, I don't think it's easy to make direct connections, and I don't like to say why my show is so important. I just do it, and then it's interesting what the audience brings to that question.
What do they bring?
You can feel, for me, watching the, you know, your job as the author is to watch the audience watching your work. And you can see and feel this tactile ripple going through the house about midway through the second act, in which the collective psyche is saying, oh, I hope there are people in this country in a room doing this right now, actually sitting in a room with a bottle of whiskey, with the shades down, talking about their kids and trying to see each other.
Which is directly taken from the play.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Mona, what can this show accomplish that you weren't able to accomplish in the Oslo Accords?
No, I think the most important message coming out of a play like this is that it is almost possible to do the impossible, and it brings sort of hope, because it was extremely unlikely that something like this should happen. I mean, it was unlikely that it should happen in Norway, but it is at the time the conflict was as intense and as complicated as ever. And the fact that even in a situation where it look at the darkest, it is still possible to bring people together, to sit talking rather than using violence. And I think that message cannot be told often enough, and it's probably more relevant than ever.
Thanks to the three of you.
Thank Terrific. You.
Thanks. Thank you, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.